The police had spent the evening in the O'Grady's home. Men Sandy and Shep had never seen before, wearing grim expressions and navy blue windbreakers emblazoned with the letters CSU, cordoned off Danny's room. They pulled apart his bed, disemboweled his closet. They tore into his desk, dismantled his furniture, and boxed up everything he had ever touched. They shredded Danny O'Grady's bedroom, dusted it down with fingerprint powder, then left as somberly as they came. Becky hid in the coat closet. Sandy's parents came over. They hugged Sandy and wept. They pulled Becky from the closet and cried harder. They looked at Shep stonily, so he would know that whatever had happened, it was his fault. Then Sandy's mother moved into the kitchen and started baking. Her father sat on the couch and did his best to look strong. The parish priest had paid a visit. He sat with Sandy and Shep. He reminded them that the Lord gave no burdens that could not be borne. He assured them faith would get them through this time of sorrow. He took to speaking of Danny in the past tense, which at once seemed natural and nearly drove Sandy out of her mind. Danny was not dead. Danny was not a burden. He was a confused and frightened boy, lying now in an institutionally gray juvenile hall with bars on the windows. He was in a state of shock, the doctors told Sandy and Shep when they tried to visit this morning. Curled up tight, with his arms wrapped around his knees, as if he was so exhausted by life he was trying to return to the womb. No, they couldn't see him yet. He needed more time and more sleep. Maybe tomorrow. Sandy didn't want to leave. She didn't want to return to a house that magically produced casseroles, and to a mother who was turning out row after row of pies as if a properly fluted crust was the secret to managing life. She didn't want to spend another minute with the priest who had married her and Shep, and who now looked at them with the solemn compassion usually reserved for lepers. She didn't want to stare at her garage, where early this morning someone had scrawled, "Baby killer," with dripping red paint. Danny wasn't a stone-cold killer. He was a child. He was her child, and she wanted her family back. She wanted to be a warrior mom, slayer of all dragons for her children. Except no one could tell her which dragon to slay. No one could tell her what had happened yesterday afternoon to turn her 8-year-old daughter into a silent ghost and her 13-year-old son into a mass murderer. Now their lawyer, Avery Johnson, was speaking with them in their kitchen. They had just returned from the preliminary hearing in front of the juvenile court judge, where Sandy had been shocked by the informality of the proceedings. The room had looked little different from a high school classroom, with its plain white walls and linoleum-tiled floor. The judge, wearing a dark robe, clearly was surprised to see two lawyers in suits. His opening comment had been, "You guys don't come here often, do you?"